From the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia mountains, it's Mike Malloy.
Having me a ball, 'cause I got a good feeling, and I don't feel no pain at all. Riding my day.
Yes, indeed it is. Friday the 13th on the Malloy program. Sadly not from live from the Daniel Scappin Studios in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, but in fact from the fabulous Horn Studios in the almost level west by Cole Trump Genius stand, smack dab in the middle of Appalachistan. I'm Bob Kincaid. Mike and Kathy are away this evening. And, we'll get your weekend primed and ready to go here in the next couple of hours. And hopefully we'll have some good conversation maybe in the second hour. We'll get the housekeeping out of the way early on, since this is a separate connection and all of that. Feel free to reach the program at area code 304-574-8178. That's 304-574-8178. Jot it down now. If you need us to pay the freight, then we're happy to do that toll-free from anywhere in North America. That includes Canada. That includes Mexico. And, of course, it also includes the United States of Trump America. And you can reach the program toll-free, 844-843-4676. That's 844-THE, T-H-E, Horn, H-O-R-N. All named after the little gig that I've been running for about, our community's been running for about 15 years, that happens from 6 to 9 Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. And so, consequently, if you want to, and then there's Skype, of course, there's always Skype. If you've never sent a contact request, feel free to send me one if you want to engage in some conversation later in the program. Bob Kincaid Horn. BobKincaidHorn. As for the rest of it, if you want to reach me by email, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com, and then there's @BobKincaid. I presume you've got the spelling by now, Truth Seeker. @BobKincaid on Twitter. And I'm also over on Facebook under the same name, same spelling. Feel free to follow. Feel free to share your comments, your thoughts. You're welcome to engage in the program most any way that you would like. So yeah, I'm all set for the weekend. I hope you are too. I've got for those of you who follow the other program, I'm a barbecue fiend, and so I've got a couple of pork butts brining with herbs and spices right now. They'll go on the smoker early in the morning. I've got a bag of chicken breast cubes that are marinating in the truth seekers in the upstate New York area will know what I'm talking about. I was introduced to this stuff years ago by a friend from Binghamton. Speedy sauce, spelled S-P-I-E-D-I-E, and it's the most delightful marinade for chicken skewers that I have ever run across, and I'm lucky that they carry it in the they carry it in the stores here. So that's going to be happening on the grill and the smoker over the weekend. I'm looking forward to it. It's always, it's tasty. And some homemade, tzatziki? Some homemade yogurt sauce to go with it. Yeah. And this is the time of year we start getting fresh, ripe tomatoes. This is when it's good in Appalachistan. If you'd like to, by the way, if you'd like to engage in some chat during the program, you can head on over to headon.live, HEADON.LIVE, headon.live. Got a chat room that doesn't require Java there, so you're free to jump into the conversation if you so desire over the course of the next hour and 55 minutes and change or so. So where to begin on this evening? Yesterday we were absolutely consumed by to call them hearings or to call them proceedings. What happened in the House of Representatives yesterday was mayhem, and it was bedlam. It was the inmates running the asylum, and they really did, as far as the inmates of the asylum go, they brought their A game. The dentist from Georgia who reads body language. I would think if you had a drill in your hand, were about to jam it into somebody's mouth, you could probably get some pretty obvious body language off that too. But I've decided that henceforward I'm going to be Bob Kincaid, radio broadcaster, and body language expert. Because, well, if dentists can be body language experts, so can radio people, right? Yeah. So just bear that in mind. Jot that down or something. But so yesterday it was all about that. But in the world in which we live now, in which the news cycle, it's no longer a 24-hour news cycle. It's like a 15-minute news cycle. And today, well, Mr. Strzok and the goons of the GOP in the House sort of fell right off the radar with the announcement that there were a dozen new indictments from Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller in the ongoing investigation into Russian asset and President of the United States, illegitimate President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, a.k.a. The Harangutan, a.k.a. Julius Geezer, a.k.a. the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, a.k.a. And this will be his nickname for the weekend, given his performance review. It's not a meeting. It's not a summit. It's a performance review with his boss, Pooty, on Monday in Helsinki. Comrade Kumquat. Yes. So that's him. But the revelations from the indictment, you can go and read the indictment for yourself on online. There's some legalese and so forth in there, but it's also there's some pretty straightforward narrative facts. And the one takeaway that I get from it is that it's probable that the majority, if not all, of the GOP in the House and possibly the Senate, well, certainly the Senate, are deeply compromised by the Russian interference that took place in our electoral process in 2016, and which, by the way, continue to this day. If for a moment you can consider that the National Rifle Association found itself inexplicably the beneficiary of Russian oligarch money, and if you then consider the fact that NRA money goes into the pockets of practically every member of the Republican Party in Congress, then yeah, they're all compromised. And they are all corrupt. And arguably should be removed from office and quite possibly criminally prosecuted. It probably won't happen. But it is worth noting that, for instance, and I did mention this on the previous program, but this is important enough that I think we can say it twice. It's important to note that one of the loudest and most strident voices for making sure that firearms proliferate across this country like toxic mushrooms after a spring rain is Tom Cotton of Arkansas. A Politico report noted that there was a sham company set up, a shell. The name of it was Starboard Strategic. And they came out of nowhere. And lo and behold, the next thing you know, they've got $19 million from the National Rifle Association. And a whole bunch of that $19 million went to make sure Thom Tillis in North Carolina and Tom Cotton, from Arkansas were reelected. Now, Tillis had a little bit of a struggle. I don't know how much of a struggle it was for Tom Cotton in Arkansas. My apologies. There's some pollen at foot around here. Hence the brief silence. My apologies again. But, Cotton has said things like, "As a hunter, gun owner, and NRA member, I understand how central the outdoorsman way of life is to Arkansas's culture and tradition." Yeah, I doubt Tom Cotton could last 3 days in the great outdoors without a whole lot of equipment and gear and, outdoorsman. Jesus Christ, I'm an outdoorsman when I stand outside smoking those pork butts over the weekend, I guess. That's right, Bob Kincaid. Well, no, I'm not, because I'm not threatening the pork butts with a goddamn gun. Jesus. So what becomes abundantly apparent from the Mueller indictment, having read them, at least from my perspective, is that, the shenanigans we saw in the House of Representatives just yesterday are completely understandable once you realize that the people putting on the shenanigans have a whole lot of ass to cover. Really. They're all compromised. No, this is not McCarthyism. McCarthyism was alleging communist affiliation where none whatsoever existed, where it was at best or worst, depending on how you look at it, mere association in a country in which we have freedom of association. This is Russian assistance, Russian meddling, and Russian finance, Russian money in American politics. And all of this comes with the backdrop of the coming performance review in Helsinki on Monday. From time to time, I struggle to come to grips with the fact that this is our reality in 2018. Who saw this coming? Because I didn't. And by the way, if you want to read the indictment, United States of America versus Viktor Borisovich Nitishko, Boris Alexeyevich Antonov, Dmitry Sergeyevich Badin, Ivan Sergeyevich Yermakov, Alexei Viktorovich Yukashev. Yeah, I know, with the W instead of the V. It's my Chekhov thing. Leave it alone. Etc. All members of the Russian military, by the way. It's over at justice.gov. Count one, conspiracy to commit an offense against the United States. It is a lengthy document. Dealing with the theft of DCCC and DNC documents. It is exhaustive in its fact pattern. And counts through to nine are aggravated identity theft. Now, none of these thugs will ever come to trial. Count 11 is conspiracy to commit an offense against the United States of a different, it's a different conspiracy. And among other things, there's reason to wonder if good old Roger Stone has finally rolled, having watched his buddy Paul Manafort do a little solitary time in the stir. Doesn't mention him by name, but it mentions circumstances that look pretty clearly like Roger Stone. And so, as we watch this, as you read it, good God, there was actually a Republican candidate for Congress. We don't know House, Senate, we don't know male, female, we don't know incumbent or challenger. But who actually reached out to get dirty work from the Russians for their campaign. The president of what we have right now in 2018, a president who is an agent and an asset of a foreign power. And you know, a way to test this is by virtue of the Republican psychological predilection for transference. Anytime they accuse Democrats of something, odds are it's something they're already up to. 8 years of Donald Trump babbling and hooting and shrieking about Barack Obama being a Kenyan Muslim, and the whole time he was in the pocket of Russian oligarchs and the Russian Federation. Jesus. You'd like to say it's shocking, but it isn't. And we've watched over the course of the past week as Julius Geiser has done everything in his power to destroy the NATO alliance, which inures, of course, to a huggable, snuggly, cuddly, wouldn't hurt a fly, pooty poot. We've watched him try to advance the positions of hardcore Brexiters, and of course, Brexit was affected by Russian meddling and interference. Oh, that's a great term. Captain Mary with a note says, checklist, Vlad's man in the White House. Or is that Vlad's man in the Whitey House? Oh, that too. Oh, well. Okay, if you're the brutal authoritarian ruler of Russia and you want more global power, what is your fantasy about your enemies in the U.S., Canada, and the European Union? First, of course, that they fight amongst each other. Check. Two, that the most powerful one, the U.S., has a ruler who looks up to you and is envious of your raw power to command obedience. Check. Three, that the U.S. becomes as corrupt as Russia. Check. Four, that racist, religious, and national identity conflicts increase in your enemy's countries. Get Trump to fan all those flames. Check. Five, get your U.S. puppet to cozy up to your buddy Kim Jong-un and praise him and then meet with him and agree to the very plan you've been proposing all along. Check. Six, you get the stooge in the White House to, you know, that's pretty rough on Larry Moe and Curly, Captain Mary. Six, you get the stooge in the White House to impose tariffs on all friends and on China, starting a trade war that will hurt everyone else's economy except, you know, Russia's. Check. Seven, make your boy back out of trade agreements that strengthen the U.S. economy. Check. Eight, just for giggles, have the marionette mention that really Russia should be back in the G8 or the G7 or the G6. Check, please. I'm thinking Hollywood is working on this already. It's going to be quite a movie. An apparatchik flick. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, the cowbell, which we usually use on the program from 6 to 9. Yeah, that the cowbell has to come up for an apparat chick flick. Oh, yes, Captain Mary. Oh, yes. Captain Mary continues, Trump is relentless in his anti-American moves. All under his false flag. Make America great again, as he calls CNN, MSNBC, National Public Radio, New York Times, Washington Post, all mainstream free press media staffed by writers and editors who understand and practice the honest professional fact-checking so disdained by Fox News, all fake news, according to him at least. The big bloat in the empty suit, tweeting six impossible lies before breakfast. Make America fake again. We are fast becoming friendless, pariah. The laughingstock of the world. If this is the America you want, Bolshoi, great! Your boy in the White House, the oafish tweeting puppet of Master String Puller Vladimir, is waiting for your further support this fall in our elections. Give Putin the extra power he craves and vote Republican. That comes, I understand, from nationofchange.org. Thank you, Captain Mary. It's a hell of a checklist. Apparat chick flick. Oh, yeah, that's good. That's high-quality pottery. Yep. So, the only remedy to any of this is what happens in November. Assuming that the election itself is not completely stolen, assuming that it isn't completely monkeyed with, I mean, Jesus Christ, the first Russian attempt at hacking emails came the day after Donald Trump called on them to do it. Christ almighty, oh, that's just circumstantial evidence. Well, as we were reminded in the hearings yesterday, circumstantial evidence is just as good as direct evidence. It all depends on how much of it and how convincing it is. But I don't think we're not going to let. You're right. Alexander with a note says, "Yes, we're the laughingstock of the entire world. What an embarrassment! And the only way we can end the embarrassment is by ending the Republican death grip on our governance, because it is a death grip." I've reached a point where I'm convinced that if there's a second Trump term, this country won't survive it. This country has changed over time as a result of incremental change, not great upheavals, for the most part. But this, to haul out the Latin terminology, is sui generis. It is its own thing. It's like nothing that's ever happened in the United States before. Granted, historically, we've had agents of foreign powers fairly highly placed in the government at the beginning of the 19th century, for instance. The top or second highest general in the United States was actually a foreign agent for the Spanish crown. But we've never had a president who was completely controlled by a foreign power, and especially an adversarial, if not enemy, foreign power. And that's terrifying. Perhaps more terrifying is that there's a third of this country, a third of the voters in this country, who are more than happy to have that situation. And that means it's going to take tremendous, and especially when you consider the gerrymandering of the House districts, it's going to take a tremendous turnout, get out the vote effort, to overcome the gerrymandering, to overcome the voter suppression, to overcome the ID laws. And the and the question between now and November is whether we have the will to do that. Because it will not be easy. It will simply not. If anything, I give style points to Robert Mueller for the timing of the indictments. Oh, yes. The White House is pissed. Interviewed by Politico, one White House staffer described the indictments that came out today as, well, it wasn't an accident. And it's a big F you from Mueller. Barry Bennett, a former Trump campaign advisor, who still has ties to the White House, said, this is just one more case of political malpractice. These guys all deserve to be indicted and deserve to be convicted, but to do it the Friday before the Monday meeting? Not so smart. Oh, it's freaking brilliant. Who are you kidding, Barry? The Monday before the Friday in which a Russian asset, Russian agent sits down with his personal handler, his boss. It's perfect timing. I would go so far as to say on Mueller's part, it's damned patriotic. Rod Rosenstein was asked about the timing and he said, well, I'll let the president speak for himself. And you know what? That used to be kind of a throwaway statement. I'll let the president speak for himself. But we live in a time now when letting the president speak for himself. I mean, Jesus Christ, he was talking about Elton John's Oregon in Montana. By the time he gets to Helsinki, he may be talking about Putin's fucking tuba. Politico reached out to John Dean. He said timing's no accident. It forces Trump to confront Putin. No, it doesn't. If he fails to do so, he's admitting guilt. Well, there's 33, 35, 40% of the country that doesn't care if he does, because they're happy he is. And it remains to be seen whether Dean is correct, saying this story will now consume USA News and blows up Trump's claim it's all a witch hunt and a hoax.
No witches.
Yeah, we saw the witches yesterday in those big photographs that Elijah Cummings brought to the Carnival Sideshow there in the House Government Oversight Committee hearing room in the Rayburn House office building. Now, didn't we? But it did have one particular effect. People have been motivated to call upon the Trump regime to outright cancel the performance review with Trump's handler in Helsinki. No one will say it that way, but nonetheless. Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, the White House spokeslier and daughter of a fake diabetes cure snake oil salesman, said, it's on, talking about the meeting on Monday. Chuck Schumer, on the other hand, said, issued a statement, President Trump should cancel his meeting with Vladimir Putin until Russia takes demonstrable and transparent steps to prove that they won't interfere in future elections, hand-jobbing, with Vladimir Putin on the heels of these indictments would be an insult to, wait a minute, we gotta have reverb for this. Oh, you got, wait. I haven't done that yet. Darn. I need to hook the reverb up to the little gizmo that sends the program up to Progressive Voices. Our democracy. It'd be an insult to our democracy. With a reminder, a gentle reminder, that democracy in the United States has always been aspirational and not so much operational. Ask women, ask people of color. Ask indigenous peoples. dig up zombie early Americans who didn't ask, who didn't own real property, and ask them how democracy worked out for them. Hey, they didn't get to vote. You see what I mean? So, yeah, our democracy always sort of makes the little short hairs stand up on the back of my neck, but I understand his meaning, or his meaning about this meeting. Meanwhile, Paul Ryan, man of silly putty, in the heat, the man whose car was eaten by woodchucks, no, really, you just can't. Said, we know Russia meddled in our elections, and we're glad these hackers are being held to account. But he's scared witless of Russia and of Trump, because he's probably compromised too. So he won't say something like, you know, we don't need to reward Vlad, big bad Vladdy Daddy, with the imprimatur of American approval and a meeting with him at a time when we've just indicted 12 of his military officers for interfering in our elections and identity theft. And that would require a level of courage that Paul Ryan will never know. They asked John Podesta, oh dear God, all you have to do is say John Podesta, and the weird little mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing freaks, the maggots just go wild and start shrieking about pizza. But he said maybe Trump should ask Putin to turn over the 12 people indicted to the United States for trial. On the other hand, Geezer Disgustus said, I would absolutely firmly ask the question. But then when Pooty says, it's not true, we did not interfere with the American election, we love America. Oh, okay, that's great. Where are the hookers? Oh, you want hookers, Donald? Is we can bring you hookers. You want for them to maybe pee-pee for you again some more? And then there's a profile in non-courage, Jeff Flake of Arizona, on his way out the door, shooting rubber-tipped arrows. Mr. President, as today's indictments reaffirm, election interference is not a question to be asked of Vladimir Putin, but a statement to be made to Vladimir Putin. You interfered in our elections. That was man of silly putty, Jeff Flake. Of course, he won't do anything to put strength behind his words, like saying, hey, because this could happen. I mean, this is a thing. It would be okay. It could be politically possible. Hey, Donnie, so you want your boy, Brett Kavanaugh, to be confirmed for the Supreme Court, do you? Well, I'm going to vote with the Democrats and say no, unless you cancel this meeting Monday and just come right to hell home, Donnie. Yeah. No, because Jeff Flake is all mouth. He has no substance, no backbone, no guts, no courage, no starch. Notice how I did all that without any reference to anybody's genitals. Yay. But he's a coward. At his core, he's a coward. He's scared to death of the maggots back in Arizona. And frankly, he probably kind of digs Brett Kavanaugh, because Brett Kavanaugh believes in all that constitutional originalism horse shit that Republicans get all dewy and sweaty over. So don't count on Jeff Flake to do anything, but note that that is a possibility. Then there's John McCain, who issued a statement saying it shows there's an extensive plot by the Putin's Russia to divide American voters and turn us on ourselves, undermine faith in democracy. this meeting should not happen. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out, or a PhD political scientist. This is what? This is Pledge Kevin Bacon in Animal House bending over saying, "Thank you, sir, may I have another?" Getting paddled with his pledge paddle. McCain continued and said, "President Trump must be willing to confront Putin from a position of strength and demonstrate..." Position of strength. Oh, that's a good one, John. You haven't lost it all yet, buddy. From a position of strength and demonstrate that there will be a serious price to pay for his ongoing aggression towards the United States and democracies around the world. If President Trump is not prepared to hold Putin accountable, the summit in Helsinki should not move forward. Groovy! Then say the next thing! Or I will vote with the Democrats against Brett Kavanaugh. The only thing this miserable, misbegotten fuck, the best part of whom ran down his mama's leg, knows is force. That's all he's ever understood. The only way to get along with Donald Trump is to exert more force. That's what the whole stupid handshake thing is about. The bone, it's a dick measuring contest with hands. In his case, tiny hands. If you want something out of him, you have to show that you have greater power than him and that you are willing to punch back harder than he can punch. And there's two perfect examples, Jeff Flake and John McCain. No judge for you. No second Supreme Court justice for you. No fucking America for a generation and a half for you, Donnie. No putting justices on the court who will be screwing America long, 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 long after you have lived your natural lifespan and been screwed into the dirt because you're too fucking crooked to bury, Donnie. Unless you cancel this goddamn meeting and come the hell home. Because he's not the only one who only understands expressions of pure force. That's all Putin understands either. There's 1,000 years or so of Russian strongman history that teaches us that is how they operate and that is how they govern. From Ivan the Terrible, through Catherine, through Peter, through the various and sundry Nicholases, through Stalin, Brezhnev, Andropov, and now this clown. All they understand is the exercise of force because that is the basis of their power. And if we really wanted to do the world some good, then pushing back and responding with that kind of political force, among other things, might very well empower the resistance inside Russia. Russian mommies and daddies can't be too particularly thrilled about sending their children into a dirty war in Ukraine. Or at the thought of going to war with Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. Mommies and daddies are pretty much the same the world over. Whether they're in Moscow, or whether they're having their children kidnapped from them by the Trump administration at the southern border of the United States. So Jack Reed of Rhode Island, the Democrat, he's the ranking member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. He said, in light of this stunning indictment by the Justice Department that these Russian conspirators attacked our democracy again. How about attacked our country? We're more than a democracy. And we're not a very good democracy. And we're communicating with Americans to interfere in our election. That as a result of all that, the meeting should not take place at all. 18 Democratic members of the House Foreign Affairs Committee signed a letter demanding that Trump cancel the meeting. Due to your constant expressions of sympathy for Vladimir Putin, we don't have confidence you can faithfully negotiate with the Russian leader. Ooh, that's going to sting. Because after all, he's a deal maker. Mark Warner of Virginia says, I'm afraid that the president could be taken advantage of because he will not be prepared. That's not mean. That's just factual. Nancy Pelosi will be under his skin. She said President Trump's continued refusal to condemn the Russians' attacks on our democracy make his meeting with Putin both pointless and dangerous. The Trump-Putin meeting must be canceled. And I understand why statements like this are made. But I would feel considerably better if I felt like down in my gut that these politicians understand in their guts what I and many of us truth seekers know in ours. That he is compromised, that he has sold our country, and that he is an active Russian agent and asset, plain and simple. That every second, every instant that he remains in the White House is an act of overt treason. What else do you call it? And my primary fear is that this country will not survive it in any form that you and I would recognize. And again, I know some people get tired of it, but still. The transformation of the Roman Republic to the Roman Empire, from so-called republican rule on democratic principles to strongman rule, was incremental and came about through the consolidation of power in the hands of wealthy people, oligarchs, that's Greeky, but came about because of incremental change over the course of about 125, 130 years. They thought they survived Sulla and started undoing his dictates. Then you get the triumvirate of Crassus, Caesar, and Pompey. Then Caesar defeats Pompey in the Civil War, consolidates his own power, gets bumped off, and then you get Marcus Antonius it was primarily Mark Antony and Octavian vying for sole control. And then it's all over. You've got strongman rule. With, of course, a veneer of SPQR, the Senate and the People of Rome. But that's all it was a veneer. And by the time that one of the emperors was taken out, I think maybe it was Caligula. they ran, and there'd been all this talk of, you know, restore the republic, restore the republic, restore the republic. They went to the Senate, and the Senate went, oh, fuck no. We need a new emperor. It was either after the killing of Caligula or Nero. I can't remember which. No, that's fine. We've gotten kind of used to having an emperor now. No sense in going back to all that Republican representative government nonsense. So the question is, how much? There was a time in this country when an allegation of playing footsie with the leader of Russia would have sent people into the streets. And the funny thing is, some of the people it would have sent into the streets are the parents and grandparents, and maybe even the actual current members of the maggot plurality. But not now. A question is on the table and is being answered every day. Are we tired of the last semblances of self-government? Because I'm not going to sit here and get all weepy about the purity of our political system. I was born at night, not last night. But whatever we have now will not survive a second Trump term. And remember all the people who rent their garments and sat in sackcloth and ashes and gnashed their teeth over the potential of a Clinton dynasty? Oh, babies. This is the dynasty. All the Clintons had was Bill and Hillary and, you know, maybe Chelsea. Then it's over. We've already got published reports that precious Ivanka wants very badly to be the first woman president. And in fact, I got a little wager on that. January the 20th, 2025. Our first woman president. If we do not find the starch in ourselves to peacefully and legally remove this man from office. Plain and simple. But that's not all there is to talk about this evening. Oh, no. No. There's a bunch more. And stuff that deserves as much attention as this does. Because everything is not okay in Merca. In lots of places in America. And we'll go into that in the coming hour or so. So I'll tell you what, let's take a little break and come back and sort of reboot and come back to some of those other topics. This is the Molloy Program for Friday the 13th. Ooh. And I'm Bob Kincaid, filling in for Mike. If you want to engage in some conversation, you're mighty welcome to. We'll be back. It's about 4 minutes before the hour, so we'll get a jump on the second hour. Again, I'm Bob Kincaid up in West Virginia, filling in for Mike this evening. Mike will be back live on Monday to deal with the fallout from the slow, painful death of what used to be American influence and the likely disaster that will follow in the wake of. Well, but we're not going to know much about the meeting, the performance review between Comrade Kumquat and his master, Vlad. Because, of course, there will be no recordings and nobody there but the one translator to tell Donnie Dimwit whatever it is they think he wants to hear. While, I mean, there's not going to be any recordings that we have. I mean, the Russians will have a recording. I mean, they've got to, you know, come on! But Mike will be back to deal with all of that on Monday. In the meantime, though, I mentioned that, you know, there's other stuff. And in particular, a story that sort of points up the shortcomings of our democracy. There has been some developments. I mean, you recall the drama and the courage of the Standing Rock people and those who came to stand with them against the Dakota Access Pipeline. It then fell off the radar to a certain extent, but there was but things continued to transpire. In particular, a non-democracy, not particularly just legal nightmare for hundreds of people who were arrested during the course of the civil disobedience to try to stop a scofflaw outlaw pipeline company from putting at hazard the water resources of the middle of the entire freaking continent. Water protectors, these people called themselves. And they demonstrated peacefully and engaged in nonviolent civil disobedience against that god-awful, it was called the indigenous people referred to it as the Black Snake. A crowd, for instance, of people who walked from the resistance camp to the site of the pipeline got surrounded by police. They were praying! They were praying when they were surrounded by police, and every last one of them were arrested. The rest of them were told if they didn't leave, they'd be arrested too. Rene Rodriguez tried to walk away, but he got arrested as he did so. Said, you know, it was a really low-key demonstration. 120 people were arrested that day. They were charged under the laws of the state of North Dakota with riot and trespass. And as of about a year ago, more than 500 of the people arrested were still facing charges. Well, that brings us to today, or this week. The federal judiciary, which of course has been hugely polluted by Republican appointments, are responding to those in their jurisdiction with brutal federal prison sentences. Red Fawn Fallis was sentenced on Wednesday. She's 39 years old. She's going to do 4 years and 9 months in federal prison for one count of civil disorder and one count of possession of a firearm and ammunition by a felon. Here's the thing. She was given the firearm by a paid FBI informant by the name of Heath Harmon. Heath Harmon is 46 years old. Heath Harmon is a member of the Fort Berthold Reservation in western North Dakota. When police officers, and this is not some big brute of a female, when police officers tackled Red Fawn to put her in handcuffs, their allegation was that three gunshots went off beside her. The deputies claim the proof is not at all clear that they reached for her left hand and took a gun away from her. Again, the gun that came from the FBI, the paid FBI snitch, Heath Harmon. Yeah. And yeah, he's a member of the, like I said, the Fort Berthold Reservation. And that's just sad. By the way, nobody got hurt. You know, unlike when, white kid goes and buys a semi-automatic assault rifle and shoots up a school or a movie theater or whatever. Nobody got hurt here. And for all we know, the cops pulled the trigger. But that's not the end of the creepiness of this case. She was going to go to trial. And she was going to mount what appears to me, at least given my limited understanding, she was going to mount a defense of necessity. And you can look it up for yourself and find out what all it involves, but the high points of it are that there is a legal theory that in some cases the potential for harm is so great and so vast and of such pervasive nature and damaging to so many people, both present and in the future, that it becomes an act of necessity upon a person of conscience to violate the law. And that such an act of necessity should be understood, and that a jury should at least be allowed to be told about that sense of necessity, and that it should be treated as what is called in the law an affirmative defense. You know, just like, you know, shooting somebody and killing somebody in self-defense. That's called an affirmative defense. Yeah, I killed him, I shot him, but I had to because my life was threatened at that point in time, and therefore I was legally justified in using deadly force. That is recognized at law. The sick extension of that is stuff like what they've got in Florida, the Stand Your Ground law that allowed Trayvon Martin to be slaughtered where he stood. Well, in the defense of necessity, nobody's saying they killed anybody. But they're saying that they violated a law because it was necessary to do so for the greater good. Well, the federal judge in Red Fawn's case said, nope, not gonna, ain't gonna happen. You, Red Fawn, don't get to talk about the treaty rights that your people have. You don't get to talk about your sense of necessity to preserve the water that keeps you and millions of other people alive. In addition, it was the position of Red Fawn that the prosecution team, without being held to account by the federal judge in question, the prosecution team had withheld evidence. And so, she pled guilty to those two counts that I mentioned earlier. And she did so expressly because she knew that she would not receive a fair trial in that United States District Court in North Dakota. And I would suggest that her presumption is correct. She was not going to receive a fair trial. I know a little bit about this because of things that we've been through dealing with the outlaw coal companies here in Appalachia. You do not get a fair shake in a court if you're going up against the extraction industry or a hydrocarbon industry in general, because they own everything. They own the politicians, they own the dirt, they think they own the air, the water, and the people themselves, and they damn sure own the judges. There were thousands of indigenous Americans, first people, who went to North Dakota. And hundreds of them facing similar injustices, but Red Fawn's is probably the most egregious. She was sentenced on Wednesday, so for 4 years and 9 months, she will be a political prisoner of the United States of America. Now, from time to time, it happens every day, I get a steady flood in my email, because the right wing is so much better at it than we are, our side is. I get a steady flood in my email of pitches for me to have various and sundry mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing, maggot-lying freaks on my own program from 6 to 9 Monday through Friday. I don't bring them on, because I don't think they have any place in a progressive conversation space. It's 10 to 1 or more the amount of right-wing broadcast time versus what people like me, people like Malloy, the other voices on Progressive Voices, friends of mine like Rick Smith do. We're outnumbered 10 to 1 at least. So giving any of these mendacious goons my airtime seems unfair, particularly to the people who keep our efforts going. I mention this because the other day, I actually got, and you might want to just kind of bite, put a knuckle between your teeth or something to keep from shrieking. It's kind of... Well, I mean, it's at least 7 o'clock on the West Coast if you're listening live right now, Truth Seeker. And God knows if you're listening to the podcast and maybe you're in your cubicle at work or something. Again, you knuckle between the teeth and just, so you don't shriek or hoot like a barn owl or scare your coworkers or anything. I received an email pitch from somebody who wanted to come on the program and declare that Paul Manafort is a political prisoner, because he was moved out of his VIP jail cell where he had his own personal cell phone and was able to circumvent the laws against emailing from prison, and where he had special food delivered and didn't have to live with another inmate, and where he also got to wear street clothes instead of, prison togs, that lovely shade of orange. Yeah, he's a political prisoner now. Goddamn dumbass maggots. They think if somebody brings Paul Manafort a cold cup of coffee, that somehow the next step is off to the ovens with Manafort. A load of horse shit. On the other hand, Red Fawn, political prisoner. If you try to get, you know, the Constitution of the United States guarantees you the right to a fair trial, or a right to a speedy trial, not necessarily fair, but a speedy one. It also guarantees you the right to confront your accusers, but then again, if the prosecution has already withheld evidence, that's kind of out the window. And if you cannot tell a jury why you did the thing that you are alleged to have done, then the jury can never actually know what it is that happened that day, or why in particular. And the only reason for a brutal sentence like this, and the only reason for keeping her from telling her story, is because she was going to get on the stand and talk about the toxic, poisonous, genocidal, ecocidal activities that created the necessity for her act of civil disobedience. And she might even talk about the business with the gun and expose the dirty business that led to it being there. Maybe she didn't even possess it. See, this is the sort of thing that makes yesterday's dance macabre in the House of Representatives troubling. Because on the one hand, while you want to look at these people in the FBI who are trying to understand exactly what it was that the Russians goddamn well did in our election, on the other hand, there's some other FBI agent out in North Dakota handing a packet of money to a guy and saying, "Yeah, why don't you give this to one of the protesters so we can bust them and stick them in prison and put this shit behind us." It's a problem. So all told, there have been 835 state criminal cases against the protesters. 670 of those are finally concluded. There were 333 that were dismissed. 17 were convicted at state trial. But if you ask representatives of the indigenous community out there, they'll say that the federal judiciary and the federal prosecutorial power was engaged because it was necessary to absolutely stomp out any indigenous resistance to resource extraction and the expansion of fossil fuel pipelines and the like in this country. Yeah, and by the way, that's another one of those things that changed when we fucked up the quadrennial one question IQ test that we take. Barack Obama had put a block on that North Dakota access pipeline. When we fucked up the one question quadrennial IQ test, well, Julius Geiser stepped in and expedited the project, and it's done now. And every drop of water in the middle of the country is at hazard for the day when, not if, but when, because they all do, and they all will, the day when that nightmare pipeline unleashes its filthy cargo all over the ground and into the water. So, this is one of those attention must be paid kind of stories. We should not let the heroism of the long-suffering, long-abused indigenous people of this country go unmentioned. And so that's why I brought it up this evening. Remember Red Fawn's name. Remember that she's rotting in a federal prison. She doesn't have a solo room. She isn't allowed to wear street clothes. She doesn't have her own phone like Paul Manafort. she's going to be there for 4 years and 9 months. And she's there because she felt a sense of necessity to act on behalf not just of herself and not just the tribal people, the tribal group of which she is a member, but for everyone who drinks water, who lives with water, who is comprised of more than 97% water, or some number like that, and for the 7 generations that will need water in the future. Just remember her. Just remember her. That's pretty heavy stuff, isn't it? Well, existential crises have a way of being heavy. But we're headed for the weekend. If you'd like to engage in some conversation, let me remind you that the line is open, and you're welcome to participate. Area code 304-574-8178. Or toll-free from anywhere, Mexico, Canada, the United States, 844-843-4676, and we'll pay the freight here. Or Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. You can jump right in if you'd like. The next story is more in the way of a public service announcement, I guess. There is something badly wrong with the way that we feed ourselves in this country. I mean, I prefer the food that I cook for myself. At least I know who's responsible. And, you know, I mentioned at the beginning of the program, I love nothing more than barbecue. God, it's so good when it's done right. And without bragging too much, I do it right. But corporate food, food produced by the giant corporate oligarchies. We went through the lettuce thing, and I guess it's finally safe to eat lettuce because we finally got all the E. coli, which comes from exposing lettuce to, you know, shit. We got that out of the food supply. That no sooner happens though than the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have issued a warning for people to not eat, to avoid, to eschew Kellogg's Honey Smacks. Honey Smacks. Honey Smacks. I remember a simpler and more innocent time when those things were called Kellogg's Super Frosted Sugar Smacks. Can't get enough of my sugar smacks. Remember, if you're of a certain age, truth seeker? It's a puffed rice cereal. And it is shockingly loaded with sugar. But it's called Honey Smacks now, so as to create the idea that somehow or another it's a little healthier, because, you know, honey's better than just plain sugar. And if you look at the ingredients label, it's probably a chock-a-block with high fructose corn syrup, which is neither. Well, there's a voluntary recall on for Honey Smacks from the Kellogg Corporation. It's been going on since mid-June. But the CDC says no. If you've got some on your shelf, no matter what the expiration date is on it, throw it away or take it to the grocery store for a refund. No matter the expiration date. On their official Twitter account, the CDC said, "Do not eat this cereal." Well, that's pretty forceful. Well, that's because 100 people in 33 different states have already gotten sick because of salmonella poisoning in Kellogg's Honey Smacks. Do not eat this cereal. Of the 33 people of the 100 people made sick in 33 states, at least 30 of them have wound up in the hospital. Just so you can be advised, a salmonella infection comes with symptoms like fever, cramps, diarrhea, and they come on within 12 to 72 hours of being exposed to the bacteria. Because for some reason or another, maybe it's the lack of all of those job-killing regulations that the Republicans have been tearing at for the last generation or so. For some reason or another, the corporate guardians of our food supply can't seem to produce food without occasionally poisoning a bunch of people. Whenever you hear some godforsaken Republican blabbing on about job-killing regulations, you know he's talking about the regulations that keep your fucking Honey Smacks from getting salmonella in them. Or shit getting all over your lettuce. But, you know, if we've got those regulations, it's gonna be bad for America. Probably induce communism. You can live with a little diarrhea and vomiting and cramping, but you can't live with socialism, because, you know, those regulations that keep the salmonella out of the goddamn Honey Smacks, that's socialism, damn it! Oh, and by the way, don't go to McDonald's either. Yeah, maybe the salad problem isn't over yet. Jesus Christ. How screwed up are we? Do they have to recall all their salads in Europe? When's the last time they recalled a box of muesli in the EU? Yeah, I agree. Muesli's kind of a gross word. You want some breakfast? Yeah, what do you have? Muesli? No, that sounds too much like a goddamn glue. But, you know, it ain't English, and I'm a barbarian. And muesli's pretty good anyway. No, we're not done with the salad problems. As of today, in the Midwest, McDonald's has stopped selling salads at 3,000 franchises. Mm-hmm. Once again, more than 100 people have fallen ill in Illinois and Iowa since May, and many of them report having eaten salads at McDonald's. Oops. Hey, look. The salad is infected with another, son of a bitch, fecal-borne parasite. God, I wish we could quit rolling the lettuce in shit before we send it out to market. Cyclospora cayetanensis. I used to be good at this. Cyclospora cayetanensis causes severe diarrhea, cramps, and fever. Hey, just like the salmonella, son of a gun. McDonald's, of course, explained that it was only out of an abundance of caution that they stopped selling their salads. And they'll start resuming, they'll resume selling the salads when they can switch to another supplier. This all comes after a recent outbreak of don't eat the freaking watermelon, the pre-cut watermelon in a box from places like Walmart and others. If you are in Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Minnesota, Nebraska, South Dakota, Montana, North Dakota, Kentucky, West Virginia, oh, fuck, and Missouri, don't eat salads at McDonald's. McDonald's is committed to the highest standards of food safety and quality control. We are closely monitoring this situation and cooperating with state and federal public health authorities as they further investigate. Hey, Ronald, wonder how much do you send people to go and check out the supply chain for your lettuce and stuff? Do you go all the way to the lettuce farm? Do you see how it's picked and the disastrous, pathetic, horrifying conditions that the people who pick the lettuce live in? Do you see the brutal hours that they work? Yeah, I'm betting the answer to that is no. Or if they do, that's going to be one of the days when Farmer Brown creates his little Potemkin farm so that all the happy and shows all the happy little brown people out there picking the lettuce. You know, one of those things that cuts into the farmers' profits is providing appropriate sanitary facilities for their workers. Maybe that's how with the cyclone, whatever. Don't drink the water, don't eat the soup, or don't eat the salad, don't eat the cereal. Yeah. Illinois health authorities said about a quarter of the 90 cyclosporiasis cases reported since May had a connection to a McDonald's franchise. Iowa said 15 cases were linked to McDonald's since June. Meanwhile, in McDonald's corporate headquarters, looks like we've got a cyclosporiasis outbreak. Call the lawyers! Good call. You'll be up for promotion soon, son. And yeah, there was the Del Monte Fresh Produce. 227 people got knocked down by cyclosporiasis from vegetable and dip trays bought in convenience stores in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, and Michigan. And for some reason, last year, you remember 2017, the first year of the Trump presidency, right? Yeah, of course you do, Truth Seeker. Last year, cyclosporiasis cases brought on by exposure of food to shit went through the roof. 2016, the last year we had anything resembling a responsible human being in the White House, there were 384 cases of cyclosporiasis in a similar period. There were 546 in 2015. There were 304 in 2014, all according to the CDC. But by God, now that America's getting all great again, whoo, mercy! We got us 1,065 reported cases of cyclosporiasis in 40 states. MAGA, y'all! MAGA! And yes, the parasites are specific to humans and tend to spread through poorly processed sewage that may find its way into irrigation sources. Aaron DiCaprio, a cooperative extension assistant specialist at UC Davis's Department of Food Science and Technology, said it's usually associated with produce that's from outside the United States. Really, Aaron? Because, you know, we're not real good about... Wait a minute. Am I to understand that we're... Because you couldn't send it on a boat, the lettuce wouldn't last. We're flying lettuce! We're flying lettuce from other countries! Oh! And by the way, again, because job-killing regulations, there is no routine testing for presence of the parasite in the U.S. produce industry. in part because it's been difficult to develop a test in the laboratory. Oh, well, it's difficult to develop a test in the laboratory. I guess we're just done. This is the country that used to think it was difficult to send a person to the moon, but we did that, but we can't find shit in the salad! Yeah. Yeah, by the way, the shit in the romaine lettuce, problem? That killed 5 people dead. 200 other people got sick. 100 of those had to be sent to the hospital. And by the way, they're on the hook for their own treatment. I wonder what the treatment bill is in a hospital in the new 90 states of America for somebody who doesn't have health care and eats some shit salad and has to go to the hospital and spend a couple of weeks there trying not to die. Hoo-wee! I tell you what, I wanna cue me up some Lee Greenwood right here, right now, and hear me some God Bless the USA, don't you, truth seeker? If tomorrow all I ever had to eat was salad and some shit, I'd gobble it down and thank my God above that I had it. And I'm proud to be an American, or at least I know I'm free. And I'll get the cramps and fevers that run up to about 103, but I'd gladly stand up and shit myself, 'cause I ate some salad today. 'Cause it ain't no place to be getting sick. God bless the USA. MAGA. But then again, I guess no maggot congressman ate any of that toxic salad, so we don't have to worry about it. And, well, you just about have to threaten impeachment to make Trump eat a salad. Remember, he's the one that likes his New York strip there at that god-awful restaurant of his in D.C. in the old post office building. He likes them done extra super double-awful well done with ketchup. Yeah, not gonna be getting any E. coli that way. Well, you're among the lucky ones, Rhonda. And you're also not on the list. Rhonda says, I eat salad at McDonald's often. I haven't had a problem once. I don't think you're in one of the danger states. But the problem is, it's a roulette wheel. Everything in this country is a corporate gamble now. Well, it's time for breakfast. Well, let's see. Do you want to potentially be poisoned by the yogurt, or do you want to potentially be poisoned by the cereal? Couldn't I just have a couple of eggs over sunny side up? Fuck no! Are you kidding? You know how much salmonella's in that undercooked egg yolk? Goddamn! So, yeah. Oh, by the way, this is too good not to share. Completely off topic, but Paul in Arizona over on Twitter says, I hate to drag DNA into this, but who in the fuck names their child Louis Gohmert? Asking for an entire population of normals. Paul, I'll let you know if we get an answer. You know, eventually we're going to get down to the point where all we can eat is oil. We'd better get to evolving quick. Wonder how many bajillion years of evolution it would take for human beings to evolve into being... I mean, we're already a carbon-based life form, right? So we need to evolve into a hydrocarbon-based life form. where we, you know, where our blood's been replaced by 10W30 or 5W20 or 0W, whatever, 0W10. And, you know, maybe we won't be so susceptible to shit in the salad. Well, thank you, Irwin. Irwin of the Notes, subject line Red Fawn. I like your coverage of the federal court in North Dakota. I thought examples would be made of the protesters. Not all, but just enough to try to scare the rest of the people. It looks like it's a little more than that, but yeah. You have a good weekend, too, Irwin. Going back to Paul Manafort, Lee in New York says, I can only think of him as a political prisoner in this regard. Paul Manafort committed crimes for political gain. Political crimes make him a political criminal. You think real good, Lee. You think real good indeed. And let's move over to the lighter side of things, shall we? We need a giggle. I was not a big fan of, what was that movie, Borat? And sometimes Sacha Baron Cohen's comedy seems a little bit over the top for me. It can be, you know, but God, I gotta give the man props. He's got the entire Republican maggot establishment shitting kittens right now, wondering how many of them have been punked for the purpose of his new Showtime series, Who is America? And the setup was apparently brilliant. He conned Godzilla from Wasilla. He conned deadbeat dad talk show host, former Congressman Joe Walsh of Illinois. He conned Count Dickula. You know, Dick Cheney. And now, it turns out he has conned serial pedophile Roy Tola Moore of Alabama. And it was a perfect con. He posed as, at least in one case, as a wounded veteran, you know, as a wheelchair and stuff. And Caribou Barbie fell for it lock, stock, and barrel. It was beautiful. And then she had to have a conniption in social media when she found out she'd been had. And it's just dirty. It's not fair. That's stolen valor for him to pretend to be a member of the military. Well, I mean, her brawling, drugged-up, felonious kid pretended to be a member of the military for a while, didn't he? And I guess it's okay if you're making a movie like American Sniper. The White Wing just went into sexual paroxysms of ecstasy over that guy. But Sacha Baron Cohen puts on a uniform and cons Sarah Palin into, you know, just being Sarah Palin. Ooh, that's unacceptable. And Joe Walsh, Dick Cheney, Joe Walsh, well, they conned me too. But the best one, the story came out yesterday. The best one so far is Roy Tola Moore. You know, the guy who, as a 30-year-old man, hit on Santa's little helper at the Gadsden Mall. Creepy. Yeah, I like that little short elf skirt she wears. And that little pointy hat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Well, now, Roy Tolamore is going to sue Sacha Baron Cohen. Because the other thing besides the military bit, Sacha Baron Cohen created a bullshit award for supporting Israel, and these maggots, I mean, they jumped at it. Why? Israel's going to give me an award? Oh yes, I can't wait. Here, I'll do the interview. And Roy Tolamore fell for it too, because he'll show up anywhere if he thinks there might be a check involved. And after having been punked, he said, "I did not know Sacha Cohen or that a Showtime TV series was being planned to embarrass, humiliate, and mock not only Israel, but also religious conservatives such as Sarah Palin, Joe Walsh, and Dick Cheney," Moore said in a statement on Thursday. Really? Religious conservatives like Count Dicula? Really? The guy who shot somebody in the face? I guess what, in the name of Jesus? Count Dicula? Personally responsible for the death of a million or more Iraqi civilians? Because he hoped it would be good for Halliburton's bottom line? That Dick Cheney? Religious conservative? What religion? I'd say Satanism, but I don't think the Satanists would have him. Mock not only Israel. There's no mocking of Israel. Israel's not Sacha Baron Cohen isn't mocking Israel. The fake Israeli award was just the bait that suckered these idiots into his scam. And not knowing that when one is in a hole, one should stop digging. I'm involved in several court cases presently to defend my honor and character against vicious false political attacks by liberals like Cohen. The funny thing is, the only reason he filed those laws, he's getting sued in some of them. That's why he says, "I'm involved in several court cases," not "I'm suing several people." Several people are suing him for the sleazy, tawdry, filthy things that he said during the course of his attempt to become a senator from a United States senator from the state of Alabama. "If Showtime airs a defamatory attack on my character, I may very well be involved in another lawsuit and have to put out a fundraising campaign like I done before, asking the credulous, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers, and good upstanding Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christians to pony up the bucks for my lavish lifestyle, me and the little woman's, so we can pretend to engage in litigation and instead maybe may buy a new Barca Lounger 20. Mm-hmm. As for Mr. Cohen, whose art is trickery, deception, and dishonesty, Alabama does not respect cowards who exhibit such traits. It's been a long time since I fought for my country in Vietnam. I'm ready to defend her again." Your country? Sacha Baron Cohen didn't say anything about your country, dumbass. Sacha Baron Cohen made a fool of you because it's a real easy recipe. And as for that business about Alabama does not respect cowards who exhibit Alabama, Sacha Baron Cohen's had a little bit of a love affair with Alabama for a while. Let's check in with Bruno from 2009 or so.
"What's up? Being gay is the new coolest thing, so that's why I've come to the gayest part of America, Alabama.
The gayest part of America, Alabama. You remember the Bruno character, don't you? Yeah, he was down on the sidelines being real gay at an Alabama-Mississippi State football game, and it was driving the Crimson Tide faithful half out in their tiny minds. And then he interviewed a football player.
Shaw Williams.
Great. Shy.
Shod.
Shod.
Shod Williams.
Shod.
Shod looking at him like he wants him to die.
What position do you play?
I play running back.
So what do you say to the people out there who say that you are so powerful in your physique, have very powerful size and pectoral muscles, and wonder what your Schwanzenstuck is like?
I don't know. I've never been put in that situation.
Are you allowed to date other members of the team, or do you have to wait till the season is over?
What?
Oh, but he's got a smile on his face, but not Roy Moore. Alabama does not respect cowards. You know what? There's nothing cowardly in what Sacha Baron Cohen did. In fact, it takes a great deal of nerve and guts to stay in character and make these fools. You know, when it comes to fishing, you bait the hook, you throw the hook in the water, you wait for a bite, but the art comes not in just having the fish take the bait, but then in setting the hook. And then reeling the fish in. And that's the thing. Sacha Baron Cohen baited the hook with the Israel Award and the military fetishism. Dangled it in front of Joe Walsh and Caribou Barbie and Roy Moore and Count Dicula, and watched him nibble around the hook. And then gobble it whole. Took it all the way to the bobber. And then hook, and the hook is set. And it's too late. And by way of trying to explain herself, Godzilla from Wasilla said,
out of respect for what I was led to believe would be a thoughtful discussion with someone who had served in uniform, I sat through a long interview full of Hollywoodisms, disrespect, and sarcasm, but finally had enough and literally physically removed my mic and walked out.
What, she metaphorically removed it? God damn, that woman's stupid.
And walked out, much to Cohen's chagrin.
I think a press person had to write that, because there's no way Sarah Palin even knows the word chagrin. God damn. What a beautiful thing. And whether it's Roy Moore or Sarah Palin or Joe Walsh or Count Dicula, these are all perfect examples of what I call W.C. Fields' third commandment. You know, Fields didn't need 10. 3 were enough. 1, well, it's actually the first commandment. The first commandment is, you can't cheat an honest man. And that's one of those deep philosophical concepts. You can't cheat an honest man because an honest man doesn't think, an honest person doesn't think he or she is going to get something over on somebody. And all cons rely on a deviousness on the part of the victim. All of them. Getting something for nothing. Or getting something more than they should get, given the value of the transaction taking place. The classic old pigeon drop is a case in point. But in this case, Roy Moore, Sarah Palin,
Joe Walsh, Count Dicula, and God knows who else, because they're done shooting, I think. They all thought that they were going to burnish their conservative credibility by getting an award that they could then tout around in the churches and the tent meetings and the revivals and the political hustings. Look here, look here, look here. Oh, brethren and sistren, I may have been accused of being a pedophile by those filthy daughters of Eve, but the state of Israel knows, after I done been through all of that, the state of Israel give me a 70 at 70 award for being such a bold supporter of the state of Israel. And I am, brethren and sistren, and see how it works. Lee with a note, Sasha Baron Cohen, if Republicans had brains and could analyze, they would realize this. Yes, I know that assumption is false. How can Republicans keep us safe from terrorists when they can't keep themselves safe from comedians? Yep, definite jingle for that. Simon Simple and Simon Pure. Yeah, not so much on the Simon Pure end of things. You can't cheat an honest man, never give a sucker an even break, and don't smarten up a chump. Do they not teach Republicans anymore that if a thing looks too good to be true, it probably is? Why would... And it's a display also of their low opinion of the Israelis. Sarah Palin has no power. Roy Moore has no power. Joe Walsh has no power. Count Dicula has no power. Why would they come to them with a special award? Well, because in their own larcenous hearts, they think they deserve it. There's a wonderful old 1960s, maybe early 1970s film with George C. Scott called The Flim Flam Man. I think that's the title. And he said, I like to think of myself as an educator. He's a con artist. I educate people. I teach them about themselves. And it's arguable that maybe Sacha Baron Cohen could have taught Roy Moore to be honest, or Sarah Palin, or Joe Walsh, or Dick Cheney. But the reason they were so easy to set the hook in is because they are incurable, plain and simple. It's almost enough to make you want to watch the program, but unfortunately, I don't have Showtime. And the crocodile tears are just rich. Religious conservatives. Ah, Roy Moore's about as much Christian as Pontius Pilate was. Sarah Palin's about as Christian as Theodosia of Byzantium was. In other words, not much at all. And so, like I said, come Monday, Mike will be back live to deconstruct the madness of the weekend and the performance review in Helsinki. But a little something to ponder. Going into it, I've said that the compromise probably runs through the entire GOP. There's evidence. Consider, for instance, the people who advanced Russian propaganda during the 2016. It all starts, of course, with the Russian agent in the White House, Donald Trump. But then there's Trump Jr., also up to his eyeballs in corruption. he helped spread the propaganda for the Kremlin. Eric Trump helped spread propaganda for the Kremlin. The only one of the Trump boys who didn't help spread propaganda for the Kremlin is Barron, and maybe that's because his mama keeps a little closer watch on him. But Sean, life support for a system haircut, Hannity, the Hannity job, his Twitter feed is filthy with advancements of what is now known to be outright Russian propaganda. Bill Falafel O'Reilly tweeted Russian propaganda. So did Kellyanne Conway. So did Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags. So did Dan Scavino, who actually writes a shit ton of Trump's tweets. Laura Ingraham tweeted Russian propaganda. Michael Cohen tweeted Russian propaganda. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. So it's been a blast, Truth Seeker. I've enjoyed being here this Friday evening. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. I'll be as anxious as you to tune in when Mike comes back on Monday. I hope you have a great time of it this weekend. And remember, as Mike always says, watch your back and keep it lit. This is the Mike Malloy Program on the Progressive Voices Network. For Mike and Kathy, with thanks for the opportunity, I'm Bob Kincaid. Have a great weekend, Mike Malloy, wherever you are.